This interview is with Fred Altenburn, a farmer from Sabin, Minnesota, who began farming in 1960. This interview was held at the Morehead State University's recording studio on January 8, 1985. The interviewer is Don Atherton, representing the Heritage Education Commission. And Mr. Altenburn, when did you start farming and where?
Well, Don, in 1960 is the first crop year that I actually started farming. And that was down in Wilken County, Minnesota. We purchased a half section of land down there. And the only reason we got it, we shopped around for quite a while and we found it was a rundown farm. The price was cheap. The land was dirty. The land was heavy and it was poorly drained. And we made a kind of a deal with the farmer that was there that he could live there for 1 year free in the buildings. And then we'd come in a year later and live in the buildings. And he wanted to sell the farm, we wanted to buy, and it did work out. So our first crop was in 1960, and then in 61 we moved on to that farmstead, and we were living there. We lived there for 9 years down in Wilken County. And then in the fall of 69, we got about 2-3 acres from my brother up closer to the home farm, and we built a new farmstead up there then. And then in the meantime, we were renting some ground, got going, and is farming a little better. We picked up a quarter here and a quarter there, and then in 1975, as everybody remember the year of the Great Flood, we purchased another quarter section right by Sabin, and we were fortunate there. About 24 hours after the ink had dried in the contract, we had the flood that came through, and it was the first time in history that that quarter had ever drowned it out. So that was one of our good fortunes, I guess, but it all worked out all right. But in 1961, we also went in to sugar beets, and from there on, we just kept on going, and that's about the way it went.
Well, Milton, Mr. Altenburn, what crops are you raising today, and just primarily, do you have any livestock or anything like this in your farming operation?
No, we don't have any livestock. We're basically just wheat and soybeans, and then, like I said, in 1961, we started sugar beet farming, and I think that was probably one of the biggest benefits in our farming operation we got into. And when I started raising beets in 61, I think that's what turned me around and made me a better farmer, or made a decent farmer out of me. And the thing that really helped when I got into beets, I relied very heavily on the experienced farmers that were neighbors and stuff raising beets, and I was never reluctant about being afraid of these people as far as driving in their yard and asking them for information. And these people did a tremendous job for me, and I went to the most successful farmers all the time, and they were just one great help. And beets and wheat have definitely been our main crop all the time.
Well, since 1960, have you felt that farming has changed up to this year of 1985?
Oh yes, definitely. It has really changed. I think starting out now, you've got to have more of a larger unit to get going now in order to satisfy the cost of the land, the machinery, and plus trying to generate a living out of it for yourself. But there's some things in getting larger that are rather scary too, because I know of some people in our community who have tried to become larger just for the sake of being larger, and the first thing you know, they've taken on some marginal land. Then they run into a help factor. You get hired help, then your cost of units go up, and I don't think that's really the answer. The day that you start losing efficiency, I think that's the wrong route to be going, is just trying to be a big farmer.
Do you have any specific things that have likes and dislikes of your farm life?
Yes, there's definitely a lot of likes in farming, and I think the best thing about it, I like, you're the number one out there yourself when you're farming independent by yourself, even though you have hired help. You're the boss, there's no doubt about it. But then the other thing is, if you make the bad decision, that's going to be right with you the rest of the year. And the challenge is out there, without a doubt. You make these commitments as far as debt and everything, and if you can service them, it makes you feel real good. And the satisfaction of growing a crop, when you go out there and work up a nice seed bed in the spring and plant that seed, see it grow to maturity, and you harvest it, and it's a good yielding crop, I think that's probably one of the most rewarding aspects of the business. And then you come up to the, well, the seasons of farming. You're never really in the same rut every day. You've got the spring work, the fall work, the summer work, and that. It's a different job all the time, and that's very interesting. You don't seem like you fall into a rut. But the dislikes of it, well, in the summertime, I know it, the family likes to travel and everything. We just don't get as much of that done and by being in farming, but that's just a small part of it. And another dislike would probably be the weather. Anybody that's in agriculture realizes that you can have a bumper crop coming in a matter of one hailstorm or a hard rainstorm. You can be wiped out in a matter of hours. And the stress and the pressure is there, but when you weigh one against the other, I'll still take farming.
Well, now, Mr. Altenburn, you started farming in 1960. What is it like for our young people that if they want to get started today?
Well, just in that short period of time, from 60 to now, say 1985, I think it's a lot tougher for a young man to get started today because the interest factor is a lot higher. There's no doubt about that, and the amount of money that we have to have on a farm to run it is, it's real tough. And cost production, take just like the price of gasoline. I can recall in gasoline and fuel, like when we first started in 61 was the first time I ever bought fuel for a house, heating my own place. We'd been living in an apartment, and I can recall that I was buying 200 gallons of fuel oil in 1961, I think for 15 cents a gallon. Well, now that's $30. That's just not too tough. I was buying that, and the pressure's there. The cost of operation, I think, is just a lot tougher for the kids today, but I think the kids can do it yet today if they start out. If they can find a willing landlord that isn't out after the top dollar and wants to work with these kids, I think the opportunity is still there if you can find the right person to work with.
Well, now, when you started in 1960 and you said you bought some marginal land, or you call it marginal land at that time, what did you have to pay for this land, and could you raise crops on that land that would service the payment on the principal and your interest at that time?
Yeah, at that time, Don, in 1960, this land I'm talking about, the first 320 acres we bought, it was priced at $150 an acre. And it had sat around for about 6 months, and it hadn't been sold. And the reason I got into it, I think, more than $150 an acre was I was able to pick it up for a $5,000 down payment. And the wife and I were both working, and we scraped and borrowed and everything, and we got in it. And it was marginal land, but at that time we weren't in beets. We were raising grain and soybeans, plus the fact we both worked off the farm in the winter months. I worked in a potato cellar for a few years, and then I was fortunate enough to tie up with a potato broker, Arnold Miller, right here in Morehead, and I was a buyer for him for 10 years. So that really helped. During the wintertime, I never had to write a check on my personal account. We were able to just live more or less in the off-farm employment.
Well, with the cost of land that today we're talking $1,000 to $1,500 an acre, how could a young person, and even with his wife having a job, how could he even start to even pay the interest on his loan in addition to the crops that he has?
If he doesn't have help from home, I see no way at $1,500 land that just no way it can be serviced. I don't think the young man can do it. The old cliche comes back, I think, if you want a farm today, either marry it or inherit it. That's going to be about the best way.
Well, now, you moved into this farm in Wilkin County in 1961. Were your conveniences there? When I say conveniences, your electricity, your water and telephone, were these things on this farm?
Yes, the water and the telephone, everything was there at that time, but the house was a very, very poor house, and we just made up our mind there that nothing beyond little linoleum, paint, little wallpaper, that was extent that we were going to stick in that house, because it was so bad that there was no way that you could come out in trying to fix it up, and that's why we lived in it for those 9 years, and then we went ahead and built ourselves a new home. And we had an FHA loan at that time, which I think is a great deal for a young couple. It worked out. We got a long-term loan with them, and they give you this loan, and when you can afford to finance it somewhere else, then they make you go to the other place, and that's where you finance it. But it worked out fine, and today we're living in a new home, and we got it paid off, and we're very thankful.
One of those first years that you were living out in Wilkin County in this old house, and what did you do for, so what are your social events of those early years there before your family was born? And
well, the social events at that time, when I came back from the Army in 1956, it would be, being a Sabin native and everything, our social events for the wife and I involved mostly my playing on a softball team. We fired up a softball team in Sabin at that time when everybody got back out of the Army, and we built a lighted softball field at Sabin in 1960, and I was one of the main cogs in that. Made a drive in the community, and in a matter of about 4 years, we had that all paid off. And the highlight of that, being on that softball team for me, was in 1964, Sabin was in a Class B, what we call it, North Dakota Class B, being we were a border town. And Sabin was awarded the state softball tournament that year. And believe it or not, in that state tournament at Sabin in 1964, Manny Margette broadcast those state tournament games live from Sabin, something that's never been heard of before. And we had the good fortune, we went on and we won the tournament. And I had the good fortune of scoring the winning run in that tournament. And that was a highlight for me. And outside of that, we went to just parties amongst all our kids our own age, and we went to other house parties with older people. We had a great time.
A farmer, your educational opportunities, have they been available? And just how far did you have the opportunity to go to school?
Yes, I was a graduate of Mord High School and went to grade school, of course, in Sabin. And after high school, I didn't go on to college or anything then. I went in a year later after high school right directly into the armed services, was in the Army. Then when I got out of the Army, I did go for 2 quarters at North Dakota State. I started out the summer school and then the fall quarter. But when I was at North Dakota State in that fall quarter is when I was looking very hard for this farmland deal, and that's when I stumbled into that farm at Wilkin County. So I dropped out of college at that time, and that's when my farming career began.
Through your education process for you, is there any particular teachers that you remember back in Sabin in the grade school? And you have children in the school there that have gone to school at Sabin now of your own. Do you see any difference in the education possibilities and how it has changed since then?
Oh, yes, there's a lot of difference in the, well, like at Sabin out there. Now, we went, that was a two-room school out there. You had first 4 grades in one room, and then you had the last 4, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th in the what we called the big room. And the lady that I remember most out at Sabin going to school would be Miss Edith Miller, or she is deceased now, but she sticks out in my mind. She was just a tremendous woman. She used to schedule softball games for us with the old Clearview School out there and other grade schools around the community. She's just a very great woman, and she's never had anything but extra time for us kids. And I think the children now, they miss something by not going to some of those old two-room schools. We had a great time, but my 2 boys now, or our 2 boys, I should say, they went to that new facility at Sabin that was up to the 6th grade. Of course, now at this time, that is closed, and all the children now come into Moorhead.
How many children was in this old Sabin school, this four-room school that you had out there, or two-room?
Oh, at the time I was going there, I suppose the average class probably ran between 5 to 8 students per class, if I can remember correctly.
How many teachers was in this building?
2. There was one teacher that taught grades 1 to 4, and one teacher had 5 through 8.
Do you think there's an advantage today then for our kids when they're one teacher for one class and that's the extent of it? Do you think they're getting a better education than you did?
No, I don't really think they are. Of course, I go along with the part now of the one teacher in town here now, I suppose, has more kids in her one class than our teacher did in all 4, but I don't think we suffered anything out there. We sat back in our desk when she had the other class right up in the front of the room, but she had thorough control at all times, and there was no goofing off. I admit that. And I think we got a good education out there.
Well, now, in your farm home there, you get many different newspapers and magazines and books and so forth. Would you like to comment on this and the farm meetings that you have to attend or do attend at this stage of your life?
Well, I think our home probably gets about the same as everybody else. We get the Fargo Forum, Minneapolis Tribune, we get the Minnesota Farmer, North Dakota Farmer, Farm Journal, Successful Farmer. And then you get a lot of other free editions that are sent out in the mail, and there's a lot of good literature in those, so you can keep up on that pretty well. And then you got television now, like we never had years ago. So a person is able to keep up on the current events pretty well, I think.
Would you care to comment on these farm meetings that we're hearing about and see publicized so much today?
Well, farm meetings, we know, Don, take up a lot of our winter time, and I think if a person wants to, he can be attending a farm meeting probably as much as twice a week. But there comes a time, and through the winter and everything of your schedule, you got to just kind of sort out the ones that you need. But boy, there are some good meetings going on. These fertilizer companies put on excellent meetings. The seed people put on great ones. And then, of course, by being a sugar beet farmer, we all know that are in the beets that we have our 2-3 meetings a year there. And in fact, we just have one coming up now in January over here at the Holiday Inn in North Dakota here in Fargo, where they have it broke down, different rooms, different people talking on different subjects. And these are very, very educational. And I think a beet farmer has really got it made if he goes over there and takes these meetings in, because you can learn so much if you want to put in the time and go to one of them.
Well, now, living out on the farm, has this, when your church membership and your relationship with religion, Mr. Alton Byrne, do you think that you've had a disadvantage of being on the farm? And how does this compare with the life of the church today?
No, I don't think we had any disadvantage whatsoever by living in the rural area. The first years that the wife and I lived down in Wilkin County, when we were down there, we joined a church in Barnesville, Minnesota, Our Savior's down in Barnesville, and that was a very interesting thing. When we moved onto the farm down in Barnesville, you might say we were way down the road. We had to make some ties there as far as church and the idea of picking a town for schools and everything, the idea of raising a family. I'll remember this all my life. When we moved onto that farm thinking about a church, we picked up the paper one day, and young Paul Knutson from Concordia College, the son of the past president of Concordia over there, he took on the job as a pastor at Our Savior's in Barnesville. So the minute we seen that, the wife and I both became very excited, because we had both went to Mord High School with Paul Knutson. So our choice was right then and there where we were going to go and join the church. So we stayed there as members, and then I also served two or three terms on the council down at the Barnesville Church at Our Savior's. And then when we moved to our place in Sabin, that was in January of 1970, we stayed members of the Barnesville Church until about 72, 73. We found it very hard to leave there. We'd made so many friends. But after moving into our place and our boys then were growing to the point of Sunday school and confirmation, we had to make a break away from that. So then we transferred up to Good Shepherd Lutheran here in Moorhead, and we've been very happy since. And even living out 11 miles from town, I don't think we miss anything by living in the country versus living in town.
Well, now, your economics in relation to farming, Mr. Alton Byrne, would you care to comment on your concepts of the federal farm programs, particularly the ASC and the Soil Conservation Service?
Well, the Soil Conservation Service, I have a real soft spot in my heart for these people. That gets back to my first farm there in Wilkin County again. I said earlier that was a rundown farm, it was low, the drainage was bad. And I got tied up with Soil Conservation Service there right away in 1961. And that was back in the days when we had that, I think, recall, it was about 5 cents a yard for moving dirt. It was given by the state or county or federal, whatever you want to call it. And we had the soil conservation people out there, and they did just a tremendous job for us. They mapped out that whole farm. And I got this contractor in. It was an elderly fellow, I remember, from Elbow Lake, Minnesota. He was about 60-some years old, and he came in. Now, you talk about the cost, the way things have changed and everything. He ran a D8 Caterpillar on that farm of mine down there, and the scraper. And I recall, I think he was getting around $12 an hour for that D8 Cat. And we moved over 20,000 yards of dirt. And those ditches that were put in that farm in 1961 are still there today. We just keep cleaning them out. We've added a few laterals, but that just goes to prove what kind of work they can do if you cooperate with them and they come out and do you a job. That's from 61 to 85, and we're still using the same ditches. And it's doing a fine job.
Well, how about the ASC, that, and just what do they do for you?
Well, the ASC, they helped us when we built our new farmstead up here. We went through the grain facility deal. I didn't have any bins or anything here in Clay County, and it would have been very hard building them. And we put up 4 grain bins out here, good-sized bins, and it's been a good program. I think it did real well, and by using a reserve and even a long-term loan that they had in those bins, we were able to get those bins up, and they more or less paid for themselves.
Now, they loaned you the money to put these bins up at a low interest rate, and is that part of the function of the ASC?
That was part of it, and then you would get the storage for that, and the storage more or less made your payment on it. But even if you didn't have those bins in the reserve program, they would loan you the money. I think it was over about a 4-year period that that loan would run. And if I recall correctly, I think you only had to have about 15% of the cash yourself for the down payment, and they would come up with the 85 over roughly that 4 or 5 year period. And it worked out real well for us.
What else does the ASC do for you in addition to this, the grain bins and the loaning the money on them? They have some other functions in the county here, I understand.
Well, yes, they have, well, if you go along with the farm program and everything, you are able to get your grain loans, where by the, just like the 9-month loan, you can take a loan on your grain for 9 months at most of the time at a lower rate of interest than your bankers have, and then at the end of the 9 months you have the option there. You can either buy the grain back, by that I mean pay the loan back and the grain is yours, or otherwise you just turn it over to the Commodity Credit Corporation and deliver it to wherever they tell you, and that's it.
What are some of the things that you have to do, Mr. Altenburn, to qualify for these grain loans and so forth that we're talking about here?
Well, that would be your farm programs. Like in your wheat and barley, if you have an allotment there in your wheat or barley, to qualify for these loans, they'll probably, like their present rate now, like on wheat, you have to set aside 30% of this allotment in order to be eligible for these loans. And on the barley, I think it's roughly 10%. Well, if you do not do that, then you will not qualify for getting these loans, or you will not even qualify to get the money, I do not believe, to even put up these grain facility bins. And I think that's the way the program is right now.
Well, now you talk about 30% of what to qualify. Is this your base acreage, or would you care to clarify this for me?
The 30% be roughly, say, if you, let's just use for easy figuring, if you had a 100-acre base allotment of wheat, well, if you wanted to qualify for the support price on there and the deficiency payment, diversion payments, on that 30%, then at 100 acres, you would only be allowed to plant 70 acres of that wheat, and 30% of that would have to lay black. And then when you lay that lay black, you more or less tie in with the soil conservation people again. Then in the fall of the year, they'll come out, and you'll have to seed that down into some kind of a cover crop so that you don't run the risk of having high erosion on that. And I think that's a very good deal that they do that. We all know that you drive through the country and you have an open winter, you see this dirt blowing around. That's a terrible, terrible loss, and it's a terrible thing to see.
Well, where does this base come from that we're talking about? Who establishes that, and who monitors it? If you have a base of 100 acres and you're planting 70 out there, who watches you, or is the watchdog that sees that you conform with these regulations that are established?
Well, the ASC has a spot check in the latter years now. They've been going on an aerial photo deal, going over measuring your farm, and they can measure that all by air. And if they tell you that you have to leave 30% of this lay idle, you can rest assured you better believe them, because they're going to be spot checking these. And if you don't have it, there can be a penalty if you've taken into this money, or they'll kick you right out of the program, and you aren't going to be able to take these loans or anything like that on this grain that you have in the bins. So it's very well policed.
Now, along with these programs that we have, these are federal programs we've been talking about here. Now we have some farm organizations, and I think we're all familiar with them. Would you like to elaborate a little bit on what ones you belong to and what you feel they are doing for the community or the country as a whole?
Well, your farm organizations, you have like the Farm Bureau, the Farmers Union, and then, like myself, I belong to the American Crystal, which is a cooperative. that the farmers here in the Red River Valley own. And I think, like the Farm Bureau, the Farmers Union, they're great because they're great lobbyists for us in Washington. Like us being members of the American Crystal, we have our lobbyist in Washington, and without these organizations, we just aren't going to have anybody down there to tell the people of our problems. We're all aware of how many farmers there are in the United States, and boy, we're a small lot. We've got to have somebody out there making some noise for us and making the nation aware of the problems out here in the rural area. So I think every farmer should be belonging to something. And another organization that I belong to, I've been just invited into in the last few years, is the Agassiz Club right here in Fargo-Moorhead. It's a group of about 50% ag people or active farmers, and the other 50% is businessmen off the main street in Fargo-Moorhead. They're either businessmen, attorneys, bankers, and I thoroughly enjoy belonging to this club because you mix and sit at a dinner table there and talk to these people across a nice dinner, and we have just a short meeting every program. And I think it's really a great club because we hear the problems, like I said, we, the farmers, we hear the problems of Main Street, and the people of Main Street, they hear the problems of the farm people. And I think it's just a good blending pot for us all.
Well, through the years, the University of Minnesota has had a program of the county extension agents in the counties, and in Clay County here, we're fortunate to have one too. Have you seen any changes with the county agent working with the farmers through the years? How is this? Do you feel this has changed since you started farming and up to 1985?
Yeah, I think the county agent is doing a real good job now. We were just talking about earlier about these farm programs, the ASC and stuff. Now, in the spring of the year, every year these programs are changing. And our own county agent here in Clay County and the staff, they're putting on these meetings late in the winter, early spring, before we get out in the field and really make a judgment call on what crops we're going to be planting. And they help coordinate these programs right now and get the people out of the ASC office to address this program that is facing every one of us. And they're doing a real good job of getting these programs explained before we actually get the grain drills and everything running. And then the county agents, they're right there at phone's reach, you might say, picking it up if you're having a problem with a crop or anything. They're working so closely with all the universities that if they can't answer it over the phone, those fellows will be out there in your yard in just a matter of a short time. And I think everybody has to take their hat off to them. And that doesn't just rely to the people out here in the farming either. A person that lives in town, if he's having trouble with his lawn or his flowers or his garden, everything, that those county agent people over there, they're willing to help anyone, and I think they're doing a real good job.
A little earlier in this interview, you mentioned that you'd gotten money from the FHA for putting your house up out here. Now, what is your feelings on the relationship with your lending agencies today compared to when you started farming? Have you seen any big change there?
Yes, I think the biggest change I have seen at the local bank has been this, that you could go into the bank and borrow a little money back there. I know when I started 25 years ago, you could go in and just give them some kind of idea what you needed it for, you would get the money. But there again, how things have changed, I know in my own operation, you went in, you didn't need the amount of money that you need today. And one of the biggest requirements, I think, today for a young farmer to get along to his banker, and you hear it all the time, the first number one rule is good records, and that is really a must. You got to have it. And another thing, not just banking, I had this driven into me by my uncle when I first started farming, who was a great farmer. He's dead and gone now. I just didn't get to spend enough time with him in ag, but his main rule to me was, don't you ever lie to your banker. And God, I can really appreciate that today. Don't even go in there and start fibbing to him or making a rosy picture when you know it isn't going to be good. If you see a problem coming, tell your banker far in advance when this trouble is going to come. And these bankers are good people. I have to mention one banker in particular from the time I started that impressed me more in agriculture, I think, than any banker I probably ever ran into in my life. And Paul Severson, he was down here at, well, it would be First National Bank at that time. In 1962, we had a complete wipeout. Our farm, and that'll only be, 60, 61, 62. It was only 3 years of farming, and I got wiped out that year. We had a flood. We didn't get on land until about July. And I can recall I went in about June and told Al, he was my banker at that time, that it was over. I just didn't have any equity. I was going to quit and get the stuff in order for me because I'll be in the fall of the year. I want to hang it up. And Al was a big man, and he looked at up from his desk at me under those glasses, and he said, you go home, do the farming. You let me worry about the money. And that'll stick in my mind the rest of my life. And anybody that knows Al Severson, he just went on to bigger things and president of banks and everything. And that's the kind of people that are going to make ag go. They made it go then, and they're going to make it go today and tomorrow. And these bankers, if you treat them good, they'll treat you good. They'll bend over backwards with you. And banking has changed. You got to bring in your records. You have to bring in your income tax, stuff that we never did back 25, 30 years ago. Now they have this budget banking down here at the local banks. You go in the wintertime, lay all your stuff out on the table, tell them what kind of money you think you're going to have. And you don't even have to go in during the summer to sign a note. You sign it in the wintertime and just pick up the phone in the summer and you draw that money as you need it. You just pay interest on it as you're using the money. And I think it's a real plus for the local bankers that they've worked hard to help the farmers. And I commend them. I needed them. And I still need them today, and I think they're good fellas.
Well, through these 25 years now, Mr. Altenburn, you started out and you've commented some on this, but your new farming methods, would you like to comment on the changes in your fertilizer, your insecticides and chemicals and your farm machinery? How have they changed?
Oh, they've changed just tremendously. I just can't even imagine at the time when I started in 1960 that these kind of changes come, and I imagine they're going to come in the next 25 years. But like fertilizer, when I first started, we had no soil testing going on. In fact, when I was younger and at home back in the 40s, or many years there until about the late 40s, we didn't even use fertilizer. But I did start using it right away in 1960. I was using it then. And then when we got into sugar beets in about the mid-60s, we went into this fertilizer testing, which was a great thing because we were buying fertilizer then, not even knowing what we needed and throwing it on the ground and wasting money. And we found it out now, since we went into testing, how important it was. We were wasting money. And it's been just so great as far as increasing the yields in crops. And the insecticides, well, especially like in raising row crops now, in sugar beets, especially now, that they are so important. We can treat for the root maggot and all the flies and any other bugs that come around, the things that the fellas raising beets 30, 35 years ago didn't have. And chemicals are the same thing. I remember when I was a youngster back in the farm, how excited we were when 2,4-D first came out. That was the only thing we had. Now we have all the different chemicals for broadleaf. We can specialize and say if you have a bad broadleaf problem of one kind or another, say like buckwheat or thistles, you got specific chemical. You can go out and really go after that weed, and it does a tremendous job. And wild oats, we never used to have a chemical for wild oats 30 years ago. If you had wild oats, it was tough. You either lived with it, or you went out and cut that grain and made hay out of it. That's about it, all you could do with it. And farm machinery, well, now that's something that has really changed. I remember when I first started raising beets in 1961, my first year of the contract, I only had 75 acres. I bought a brand new sugar beet harvester in 1962, an old John Deere two-row. And I remember very clearly I spent $900 for that machine, a brand new harvester. Now today, I can't even buy an elevator chain for my six-row beet harvester for that kind of money. And the four-wheel drive tractors, the way they've taken off. A four-wheel drive tractor now costs more money, or even a two-wheel drive tractor costs more money now, and I paid for my first half section of land. And that's the way it's changed, and I don't know where it's going to stop.
Well, Mr. Altenburn, as you've lived out on the farm here, I know you get called on to do different things. What has your been involvement with the offices in the township and the school and the farm organization and so forth? Could you make a few comments on this?
Well, as far as the school, Don, the only thing I ever had to do as far as an office in school, I didn't really hold an office, but back here a few years ago, anybody in Morehead will remember the financial crunch we had here, the closing of schools and everything. In fact, I served on that committee with you at that time when you were a school official here. We had that budget committee, and that was a very, very interesting term that I served there just over a matter of about 6 weeks or so here a few years ago, and that was very interesting. You see really the problems that you have in the school district and everything. As far as other organizations, I just got done serving a few terms out here in the Cragness Elevator Board, which was very, very educational for me. As a farmer, you always haul grain to an elevator and you wonder, why are they so cheap and don't want to pay up? But when you sit on the inside, see how the organization is run, it's not that easy to be leading the pack as far as paying the top dollar every day for that grain that you're hauling in there. And then I said earlier, as far as the church board, serving on there, and it's been interesting. And then I've also served on some, just like about everybody else out in the rural area, a lot of sports groups and rod and gun organizations, stuff like that, mixed up in the community, and it's been very enjoyable.
Well, now, politics play an important role in all of our lives, and as you, as a farmer, Mr. Alton Byrne, have you been involved with the party, and do you have any preferences there?
I haven't really been involved with any particular political party, and I think I classify myself strictly as an independent. When it comes to politics, rather than being all gung-ho about one particular party, the fellow that is running for the office, I look at the personality of the man, and it doesn't really make that much difference to me if he's a good, sound Republican or a good, sound Democrat. If I listen to this man on television and read about his comments in the paper and talk to him personally, that's about the way I make up my mind which kind of a way I'm going to be going on the ticket. I go more or less by the personality of the man.
Thank you, Mr. Alton Byrne. We appreciate your comments here today.